Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm here again with Dr. David Lowe, talking about his book, Universal Spiritual Philosophy and Practice, an informal textbook for discerning seekers. We've interviewed Dave on a number of different times, and these are available in the archives. If you go to www.plasticas.com, you'll be able to scroll down and see the previous interviews, and we're pleased to have him back on the show. Welcome, David.
Welcome. Thank you so much, Susan, for having me. It's always an honor.
So you want to give a little bit about your background for the listening audience and how you came to write the book?
Sure. I'm basically a former adjunct professor of religion and a longtime spiritual seeker, about 40 years worth. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I'm doing freelance, spiritually oriented lecturing, counseling, and dream work and promoting my first book. Basically, I was teaching religious studies courses here in Philadelphia, but it was getting older and older doing that. It was more and more boring and discontented. Something else was in the offing. I could tell something else was sort of forming off in the wings. And one day, sitting in a library, I had this epiphany. It was definitely a kind of a peak experience. The concept for the book crystallized in my mind, and I felt real joy. So I was strongly motivated to just start writing. It like flowed out of me in 3 months, revised in 3 months, and I put it together and self-published over 6 months after that. Boom, boom, boom. So this
Great.
Is my magnum opus, if you will.
All right. Well, I've recommended it to a number of people who wanted a book that I guess comprised a lot of different aspects of spirituality. You know, if you had to recommend one book, I'm often recommending your book.
Well, that's cool. Thank you so much. It's 200 pages, 48 illustrations, nice graphics, easy to read. It's profound stuff, but mm-hmm. Certain people have told me I get more out of reading the same section each time. That's what I wanted to do. It's a concise overview of everything in mystical spirituality. But, the common things that all the religions have in common in both philosophy and practice, to sort of mm-hmm. outline the whole thing in a really easy form, but profound at the same time. Yeah.
So, what is unique about this book? What would you say the download that you got was different than other books written on the same topic?
Well, everything else out there I could find is too long in detail for a lot of people to read.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mostly you talk of academic philosophy, which is, well, most books about contemporary spirituality, informal, popular contemporary spirituality, are written based on one person's personal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
What this book does is summarize thousands of people's roughly similar experiences. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so it's a systematic overview. It's kind of like an encyclopedia, if you will. It's technical, but with it doesn't get into any one person's experience, precisely because everybody has different experiences of the same teacher or of the same path or book. But it does give you overall consistencies in the way people experience things in different. In different religious settings and with different practices. It's a concise overview of the whole shebang. It's the fact that it's short, fun, easy to read because of the illustrations and word balloons and so forth, but also profound at the same time. All within 200 pages.
And you've noticed in the book you talk about this, that there's underlying similarities with all the religions.
Right.
Underlying themes. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, the major one, but the most important thing is to realize that they're all monotheistic and they're all polytheistic. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they all have one God and they all have many gods. Here's what I mean. Things like hymns, beautiful statuary, great architecture, dignified priesthoods in their robes and finery and so on, or wonderful internal dreams and images, levels of,
mm-hmm.
All that sort of thing. We love it. We need sights, sounds, and smells in order to relate to divinity.
Mm-hmm.
So, but according to most of the real conservative branches of the Western faiths, all that stuff is idolatry, right? But that's precisely the thing that makes us human.
Yeah,
that's what makes us human. As human beings, we shouldn't deny ourselves profoundly beautiful images or music which move us. But often we do. I mean, in original Sunni Islam, music is actually forbidden.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? I mean, that is stunningly inhuman. So that's a basic way of understanding that, you know, all the deities and all the spirits and earth spirits and so forth that you see in Hinduism, Taoism, Yoruba, parts of Buddhism, the Celtic faiths, all those deities and spirits represent aspects of the incomprehensible one that we can relate to as human beings. So they're all polytheistic in a very broad sense of the term.
And some religions, like Catholicism, really have that more than others. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Methodist,
it's amazing. You know, you got the Pope, the patron saints, the Madonna, in addition to God and Jesus Christ. Right. So, so some scholars think Catholicism is really more of a polytheism than a monotheism.
Right.
And for that reason, it will always be the biggest branch of in Christianity by a mile.
Mm-hmm.
And also because it preserves the idea of a living spiritual master, which you pretty much don't find in the Western traditions for the most part.
It's interesting too. I knew Nancy, who was out in Conyers, and she channeled Mother Mary for the Catholic Church for a while.
Okay.
And a friend of mine, Dr. Sanchez, wrote a book on her. He's a neurologist. And did a bunch of brain work when she was channeling, and just fascinating stuff. But essentially what he came to conclude is that there is a light that is at the center of all of this. In other words, the light actually came out through some of the relics and the photos, and that light was what was, I guess, behind a lot of the miracles and the mysticism in Catholicism, which I thought was fascinating. He wrote a couple of books. And,
it's really, I mean, you know, there is an underlying shimmering essence, if you will, to all this stuff. And the fact that, you know, that light is all intelligent. And, I mean, the notion that you could detect it like Sri Yantra in Hinduism, that really profound star type diagram which goes inward, that supposedly came up in some sort of sound experiment in which the resonance actually portrayed in like a magnetic filing field or something, like Sri Yantra diagram. So there are these deep resonances with the way physics manifests in reality. That's cool. Yeah.
Well, I mean, think about, was it Peter that was blinded by the light?
That was St. Paul.
Oh, Paul.
St. Paul's
okay,
big
Paul
experience.
Was blinded by the light.
Right.
I mean, it's almost like regular people that interact with this light can have, you know, adverse things happen because they're not ready for it. But then a lot of the higher spiritual masters and the saints interact with the light all the time, and are, you know, that's when all the miracles occur. You know, it's like, it's very interesting, isn't it? But even New Age, you know, when the New Age spirituality is talking, they talk about the light. And then to think about that, it probably goes back into just about every religion.
And what's amazing to think is, you know, if you can be a saint or realized being and so forth, blind, as well as being a sighted person, you could be blind that way. So it doesn't have anything to do with light, sound, source, truth, love. It's all the same thing in some really, really profound fashion.
It is.
I think that, you know, as far as miracles go, there's some interesting things to observe there. I think that such events as are actually portrayed in the Bible are really rare. The Orthodox religion has always liked to rely upon spectacular stories to get people interested. So when, like, a dead person comes back to life, or leprosy vanishing before your eyes, that's spectacular. It makes the tabloids, right? What's not spectacular is the way that miracles usually happen. like say you visit a renowned spiritual master, a guru or something, and you have a powerful mm-hmm. experience, you maybe give him a donation or something. That night, he shows up in your dreams, does some hands-on healing and so forth, and mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, your cancer's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sort of thing happens around contemporary masters all the time.
It sure
but
does.
It doesn't make the National Enquirer because it's not in your face. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's But there's no question that it can happen in that way. But I think relatively rarely it can happen that way though. I think so.
Well, I did a bunch of research on spontaneous remission. You may have remembered that Noetic Science had a book on spontaneous remission, all the 100 documented cases. And spontaneous remission, to me, is scalar energy coming from the fifth dimension into our dimension. And it usually starts at the crown and goes to the feet. And like somebody with metastatic cancer, by the time it reaches, I mean, it's just less than a minute, all their cancer's gone. So it totally transforms them. But right then, you know, it's like it's very interesting. Now, it can be slower. I mean, I'm not saying it's always that fast. And certainly when the masters appear in the dream, they may wake up with no cancer. Or it may take 6 weeks for the cancer to go away.
But the idea is that
the scalar energy, which the masters, I think that's what the masters are tapping into when they do the healings, transform the cancer is a fourth dimensional intrusion into the third dimension. So.
Right.
It's not really, I don't think it's really changing third-dimensional things so much. Because there are some things that really we don't see spontaneous remissions of.
But you ought to be able to document the actual change in the particular group of cells in the body in a particular place. If you could have that, have the person's chest in an MRI machine at the same time mm-hmm. that light came down, you should be able to detect something.
That would be amazing if you could do that.
Yeah, well, I imagine you could. I mean, an MRI more so than a CAT scan or something like that. I imagine that it would pick it up. If you could have that transformation happen at that second, then, you know, within about 10 minutes, the cells would be transformed or killed or whatever. That would be cool to document.
So what I think happens, though, I think that the fourth dimensional energy that causes cancer is forced back into the fourth dimension. And as it withdraws, then the cancer withdraws. Do you see what I mean? It's like things that are fourth dimensional, which would be probably schizophrenia, Morgellons, and cancer, could be like totally wiped out with this energy. Now, other things might take a little bit longer. There are, in the book Spontaneous Remission, there are some congenital things that were changed.
Right.
So it's not, you know, but cancer is the big one. Cancer is the one that you see most often. I think I think the mechanism of disease is somehow makes it easier for the spontaneous remission to occur. And did you ever hear about Greg Braden's there were like three masters chanting. A woman had a bladder tumor.
Right.
And there were three, I think, Qigong masters chanting. And as you could see the tumor disappear within about 3 minutes during the chanting. And all they were saying is already gone, already gone, already gone.
Right.
What they were doing is unmanifesting the tumor by sound. This would be sound more than light, probably.
Right. Right.
But you can watch the video. He has publicized the video quite a bit. I'm sure it's still on YouTube. So that's an idea where sound. The light we're talking about is probably the thing that goes from the crown to the feet, but with sound and intent of three masters at once, the tumor goes away in, I think, less than 4 minutes.
That's fascinating. It makes all the sense in the world. It's great also that they seem to have been able to capture that under laboratory conditions. I mean, usually spiritual energy...
Yeah, the ultrasound shows it. I mean, it literally just disappears.
Usually spiritual energy or, you know, in order to try to produce psychic phenomena, which you could ideally document and show to critics and so forth. It's very playful. It does not conform itself to laboratory conditions, you know.
Right.
So evidence is almost always anecdotal for these kinds of things.
I think if you could do it quickly, though, within, you know, a couple of minutes, you could, because the ultrasound would be, you see, MRI and CTs, they're too magnetically disruptive or radiation disruptive, you know what I mean? Ultrasound would be the way to do it.
Wow, okay.
It really would be. You know,
set it
you
up.
Could
that sounds great.
Hold the energy and then actually keep the ultrasound on the tumor and you could see the tumor disappear.
Yeah, right. So, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, one thing which really happens when you tune into a universal dimension of spirituality is that you do gain an appreciation for physics. You know, you do see that, you know, that science, far from being something which contradicts religious truth, it affirms it at a deeper level. And that's what we have to begin to understand, that, you know, there's only so much. I mean, it's amazing the recent breakthroughs and philosophical insights about how, you know, the physics of reality corresponds with consciousness and so forth. And more investigation can be done along those lines, the better. That's something which I only briefly mentioned in the book, because that's a huge topic, of course.
Yeah, I think, though, that most religions, at the various highest levels anyway, are familiar with these concepts, and that, you know, they try to step it down so that people can understand it better, because it is hard to understand multiple dimensions and, you know, alternate realities, and the fact that where we live is not really reality at all. It just is a construct. You know, we think that this is real, but obviously, it's no more real than when you wake up from a dream and your dream goes. You know, your dream is, you know, it was there when you were in it, but once you wake up, you realize that it was also a concept.
You're absolutely right.
It wasn't real. So when you die, this is what happens. You wake up and you go, oh my God, you know, that life wasn't really that pleasant, you know, just like you wake up from the dream. You know?
I think one.
I'm glad I'm not living in that again. You know.
Right. I think one of the most valuable experiences most people can have is to have a dream which is just as vivid as this reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that really convinces you that, you know, which is which, you know, there are, and really understanding that, of course, the whole project of tuning oneself into understanding and taking heed of your dreams is a major thing. Dreams are the most evident and obvious way that we all have of being able to communicate with higher reality.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone dreams every night, and we cease to be able to function if we can't dream. Basically, that's been known for decades.
Right.
I think, you know, our spiritual body needs its cycle of activity, just like our physical body does.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's largely why we sleep. You know, sleep, of course, is still more or less a mystery to empirical scientists, because it doesn't relieve fatigue or anything like that. But it does allow our physical, celestial, /astral/so forth body to have its own cycle of activity.
Right.
That's really what sleep is for, you know. And so, yeah, it's very important to try to tune into what your dreams are saying, because we all have that natural faculty to pick up that information which transcends time and space. It's just a matter of taking the time to pay attention to it. Yeah, it's important.
And we've done a radio show with David on dream analysis too, so that's an
that's a specialty of mine. I do find that I have a bit of a gift for it. I've been able in many different settings, substance abuse, other counseling settings, to help people understand what their dreams are saying. And it's a matter of really fathoming. You don't need to understand symbolism, although that's something which does dawn on you if you study it. But just the desire to have a dialogue with your dreams, to write them down on a regular basis, try to fathom their meaning yourself. You know, write down bullet points. If all you have is 5 minutes a day, just just some basic bullet points about your dreams, and then writing your frustrations down in your diary back. You're asking, it's that dialogue with God. That's what's important, really.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that, but it does take time. It does take time.
Yeah. Well, some people just do it, record it when they wake up, too. It's easy, you know, sometimes it's quicker to speak it. And you have a record feature on your iPhone.
Right. Yes, right. Sure. You can do that.
People don't realize that, but you do.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And so what I do, I think the most valuable thing that I've found helps me remember dreams is when I have one. If I don't want to get out of bed and disturb my wife and so forth, then if you can rehearse it in your mind 5 or 6 times, you know,
mm-hmm.
before you go back to sleep, to imprint it in your memory, and it'll be mm-hmm. with you in the morning, I find. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, dreams are important.
So, you talk about angels and spirit guides.
Right.
Would you like to go into that topic for a little bit?
Sure. I mean, there are three of them. You could call them angels. One of them is my mm-hmm. guru. Another one is an ordinary person. He's a family man who woke up completely and who now teaches small groups here and there. Mm-hmm. The third one is the Hindu deity Ganesha, the elephant mm-hmm. god. The first two show up every so often in dreams to help me understand stuff. Sometimes mm-hmm. there's dialogue, but usually there's just a brief symbolic flash.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing to clarify, you know, I can't call on these guys. They show up when they see fit. There's mm-hmm. a whole other class of seekers out there who seem to be able to interact with their spirit guides more or less at will in meditation mm-hmm. or whatever. I'm suspicious of that, but that's me. That's a whole other discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I found these angels through due to the initiation that I got from my guru. That opened mm-hmm. up a whole new reality. In my case, that the context of that was a devotional Hindu mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
But the angels, of course, are archetypal. They represent universal principles.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they've it's been really important to have those spirit guides. A lot of stuff to help me make decisions, who to marry, where to go to grad school, a lot of warnings around health issues, the psychoneurological stuff that I've dealt with, but also just things that it was important for me to be aware of, both big and little things, in order to avoid problems. I think I mentioned last time we talked about that dream I had about a woman who was nagging and the child who was squalling. Mm-hmm. Stay away from that person.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget one time years ago after I'd had some medical procedure. I don't remember what. This is when I was living in Decatur, in fact. I'd gotten through this big medical procedure, and I had all my bills paid. But there was one, but I had a dream one night that said, a good customer always pays. So I go back looking through all my old bills, and I found one that hadn't been paid yet. So, you know, God cares about your credit rating, at least in my case. So, I mean, things like that have happened over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I benefited tremendously from having had that kind of internal guidance. Yeah.
Yeah, I get similar warnings and dates and places and real specific information in dreams that then is very important. So.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing that you can tune into a deeper level of your dreams by really, you know, beginning to study symbolism and mythology
mm-hmm.
and understanding that there are these underlying themes which you see over and over again in all the different religions, which show up again and again, and those symbols, you know, represent, it's really important to understand how there is like a universal language underneath everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some people who think that there are no common underlying factors that connect all of us, which is nonsense. There are. You know, we,
mm-hmm.
everybody, this is an example that I use in the book. You take an 80-year-old shaman from the Amazon, illiterate,
mm-hmm.
a 30-year-old life insurance salesman from New York City with an MBA, mm-hmm. the 12-year-old son of an Afghan terrorist who's already carrying an AK-47. Right? Mm-hmm. Three totally different people, right? But they all perceive the same what I call basic world. They all know what clouds are, what weather is, what sex is, what horses are, what weather is. You know, before we do anything with information that we get through our senses, we all have the same basic perception of the world. And that is what forms itself into symbols, adapting itself automatically to different people's cultural circumstances through universal archetypes. So, you know, dreams, you know, we all have that mechanism through which we can tune into stuff. And that information is on offer all the time. It's a natural part of who we are to always be getting information from higher levels of reality about things we can do to avoid issues in our life. And, you know, repetitive dreams, I think, are especially important to understand. We wouldn't be having repetitive dreams if there wasn't something in our life that could be fixed or improved a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because the repetitive dreams and nightmares, the term nightmare is a misnomer because there's no such thing as a bad dream, I think. Nightmares are nightmares only because they're unpleasant only to get our attention. That's the only reason that they're unpleasant. But they're the most valuable dreams because they want to warn us about the things that are most important.
Mm-hmm.
They tell us about things that we've been doing our best to ignore in our lives. So, and repetitive dreams, again, you know, if they wouldn't be happening if there wasn't something that you could be fixing or improving, you know. I don't mean to carry on about dreams like this, but, you know, they're important. one more thing to note about dreams is that your life will turn out okay if you ignore your dreams, like most people's life more or less do, but insofar as there's always greater levels of happiness and fulfillment to be had, insofar as that's true, then the option exists to have that fulfillment, to have that greater happiness, right? And dreams, that's what dreams are for. If you choose to pursue a spiritual path, you can do so most profitably, and it's always available to start looking at your dreams. That's what they're there for, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you like to give your contact information?
Yeah, it's david@worldspirituality.com. That's the easy email to remember. David Lowe, LOWMSPHD.com is the website. You can get the book. I do dream work. I teach meditation, spirituality counseling, and also conversations. People who want to have interesting conversations. You imagine leaning your iPhone up against a salt shaker and speaking to somebody for $10 an evening. If there's like a group of you, six or seven people who want to understand more about Islam and terrorism, or, you know, Christianity and the Celtic faiths, or any range of topics, Buddhist philosophy and ethics, which is a very popular topic, Buddhism being such an apolitical religion, I can be part of that conversation and help people understand stuff. That's kind of what I'm about, getting folks to tune into deeper levels of their spirituality by understanding that the basis of all the faith is the same thing.
It seems to me that sometimes, at least in some of the religions, the lessons are a little bit different. That Judaism is a lot about obedience and following the law. Christianity is has a lot of forgiveness in it. Buddhism, of course, is founded on meditation and going within.
Right.
And so, although all of the religions have some of these qualities, you're probably born into the religion that you need to be born into for where you're at the time, you know, what you would benefit most from.
Right. I think religions also, they're really sort of a testing ground in terms of how well people eventually start thinking things through for themselves. Mm-hmm. But fundamentalism is a real issue for me, which I think basically is a matter of, like, arrested developmental psychology. Mm-hmm. There is a spiritual element involved in fundamentalist, you know, level religions, but it gets warped. I mean, it's like, you know,
right.
In your late childhood, early teens, you know, little kids like to form clubs and cliques. You know, we're the best, right?
Mm-hmm.
At that age, you cannot see beyond your own tribe. You just can't, mm-hmm. okay? But on a more subtle level, I think the same thing happens with lots of adults in the religions. That same short-sighted, childish need to be with the best exists mm-hmm. subconsciously.
Right.
And so you become a fundamentalist. You know, we're the best and only.
Yeah.
And and there's this primordial insecurity they feel because it's mm-hmm. not really true. You know, we're all the same in the end, right? So in order to keep yourself convinced that you're inherently superior in your belief, mm-hmm. you conquer everybody else. Yeah. It's overwhelmingly obvious to me that that is what religious warfare is all about. It's that
yeah.
profound insecurity that you have to keep convincing yourself of. You do that by, you know, trying to convert and conquer other people.
Yeah, and it's really incredible to me. I've run across a few fundamentalists that see a demon behind every tree and,
right.
and you know, are very, very sure that they only have the way and everybody else doesn't.
Right.
And, of course, here, you know, I'm treating them because they're ill from their breast implants, and they have a very complex illness that requires, you know, some spiritual tools like applied kinesiology and you know, a lot of things not maybe even known about by traditional medicine. So I'm,
right.
you know, I'm going through this process trying to figure out what co-infections they have, what toxicities they have, and getting them on the right drugs and supplements. And what happens is interesting. To their own detriment, because obviously they're not going to get detoxed anywhere else and they're not going to get treated for their co-infections anywhere else, they all of a sudden decide I'm of the devil or I'm, isn't that interesting? I feel
yeah.
it happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I feel it's protective. I don't get upset by it because I feel, well, then this person isn't supposed to be here. And
right.
usually they'll start picking fights with me. And of course I just ask, you know, I say, do I need to let this person go? And usually it's yes. And so I just tell them that I don't think that I'm going to be able to do their surgery for them. But it's happened a couple of times. But I just think it's protective because obviously these are the same kinds of people that would sue at the drop of a hat and
yeah,
you
right.
know, have
and, you
absolutely
know,
no ability for forgiveness if you had
yeah.
a problem during surgery.
Yeah.
You know,
and
many of them are ministers and
yeah, exactly they're the worst
and,
you know, this
and
is,
preachers and you know your jaw drops. It's like,
yeah,
oh, my
right.
God.
Well, it's your jaw
these
drops, but
it
doesn't.
People are leaders in their religion, and yet they are willing to sacrifice their health for
yeah.
these crazy beliefs.
Yeah,
it's
the
incredible.
Whole, you know, the whole notion of monotheism, this one God business, turns
mm-hmm.
out to be way, way too masculine and problematic. For many people, it's
right.
a huge ego trip, identifying with this one God above
no
and beyond
kidding.
Everything.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean,
and if you're not with them, you're against them. You know,
well,
the applied kinesiology becomes something of the devil.
Right.
You know,
yeah, and I think it's important
insane.
To understand how really this profound philosophical delusion. I mean,
yeah.
Previous to this one God coming along, we were all part of this indigenous spiritual ecosystem, one with the earth,
mm-hmm.
spirits everywhere, exchanging energy. Then this big boss heavyweight comes along and says, I'm the greatest. All the others are
right.
wrong. Build your civilization. Be great and transcend just like me.
Yeah.
All of which makes most people look at our beautiful feminine earth as sinful and dirty with
right.
all its fertility,
right.
the plants and animals. So we can rape it all we want with fracking and mining and
yeah.
deforestation. And then
mm-hmm.
we feel justified in regulating women's behavior to avoid temptation.
Right.
You know, philosophically, all that stuff runs together. I think a lot of people
yeah.
don't realize that. It all comes
yeah.
from this notion of this one big papa God up there that
yeah.
you identify with your ego.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and the God is very judging, you know. It's not, yeah, you know, what I say to these people sometimes is, well, you're supposed to be spiritual if you're religious. I said, why don't you ask if you're supposed to have, you know, why don't you ask, pray if you need to, and see what this is about, you know. I mean, but they're not capable of going within.
Yeah,
they're really
yeah.
not.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Everything's
you know,
done at the level of the mind, and everything's done in judgmental,
yeah.
Deciding that you know, that nobody but them are on the right path.
Right, and it's also, I think, it's a matter of, you know, Orthodox religion, it's about maintaining norms and conventions.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a belief system, and you can pretty much parrot that belief system back to whoever.
Right, yeah.
But, well, one thing that I think everybody really discovers this their own way, but you really have to think, no matter how powerful the teachings are that you get from scriptures or masters or what have you, you have to think them through for yourself and discover them yourself in a very interesting way. No matter how many ways you got it literally from your teachers and books, you have to have your own understanding of that teaching before you can really embody it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, thinking it through for yourself is something which a lot of these folks aren't even beginning to be ready to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they all have to do.
Yeah.
At which point you begin to unlearn the notion that, you know, this idea about Armageddon, Jesus coming back at the end of time to wage a war between good and evil, you know, that's a children's story.
Right.
You know, it's that's metaphorical for internal processes, right? Or the resurrection. It's nothing to do with raising the dead. Well, it's all about internal cleansing and purification of the soul. So all these things, you know, you get religious warfare based on competing sacred histories. This is one reason I wrote the book. This is it. If you go really get to the deeper fundamental basis of these faiths, you realize that Muslims realize they don't need to build a caliphate. Jews would realize that they don't need to build their temple on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. So you would get over your and Christians would realize that the second coming of Christ has nothing to do with Jesus coming back and leading a battle, but it refers rather to an awakening. It's just like a dim recognition of a new awakening, which is going to occur to internally. Okay, see, the awakened energy of, well, in Hindu mythology terminology of, you know, the Kundalini Shakti.
Right.
So the second coming of Christ is, it's a rediscovery of that profound thing that you've lost. Okay, and a dim recognition that's what enlightenment is, you know, but it's thought of externally because the person isn't even close to being ready to understand it internally.
Well, much of the history of Christ was also left out, you know, all of the years in India and Egypt and Ireland where he underwent all the initiatory processes and even went through ascension in India and then elected to come back and you know, live out his story.
Right, right. Although none of that, it may be true, but it's not really important to understand that, you know, sure, he was a realized being, but you know, they pop up everywhere. Jesus happened to have the best press. He got the best historical karmic assignment, if you will, you know.
Right.
But, I mean, for me, the marvelous thing about enlightenment, if you really understand it at its deepest level, and I haven't begun to do that, but I do get very inspired by all of the descriptions and what they imply, is that, you know, each of us is the most blindingly arrogant, astounding, radical truth. We are, each of us is all there is, you know. In the end, the only difference between you and me and Jesus is that he had the more noteworthy external karma than I did or than you did. But the astounding truth is that we are just the same otherwise.
Right.
It's amazing,
right.
You know, because we have these impressions of these great beings out there. So, I mean, one group of people that I've associated with over the last few years, I know 8 or 9 people who you know, have had major awakenings after a lifetime of seeking. And this awakening blew away all of their other awakenings by a mile. And they describe it as complete and final.
Right.
So, I mean, as human beings, the paradox, of course, is that as human beings, you continue to grow and change. But spiritually, they're done, cooked. They've done all their work. And so that happens. You know, I mean, the leap of faith is Well, is it the same enlightenment that all these great masters have? Mm-hmm. And philosophically, you have to conclude that it is.
Yep.
That's what all my studies have led me to conclude, that this enlightenment is something that can happen to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And although we do think about levels, and we get insights from developmental psychology, which you can project mm-hmm. up into higher spiritual levels and so forth. But the teaching is that this is something that can happen to anybody, any human being of average intelligence. And even though, it doesn't require a lot of training or a lot of necessary spiritual work ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
More and more often these days, it seems to be happening to people with no previous exposure to practices or mm-hmm. to spiritual traditions or practices or anything like that.
Right.
So yeah, it's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Although studying the other material around Jesus can be inspirational, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
He did go to India, no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we are coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Sure. David Lowe, david@worldspirituality.com. It's an easy email to remember, david@worldspirituality.com. Website, David Lowe, L-O-W, no E on the end of the name, David Lowe, msphd.com.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Do you have any words of wisdom for our listening audience before we end the program?
Just breathe. If there's one thing you can do in life, if you have no interest in spirituality, but you want to be happier overall, just breathe more deeply and slowly. If everybody did that, mm-hmm. we would have world peace in 3 months.
That's probably true.
Breathe more deeply
okay.
and slowly, and think about your issues. If you don't think you have any issues, look around you. Look mm-hmm. at all the pain and suffering in the world, and feel how those issues affect you, because you are also you are that pain and suffering out there in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It is in you, and you are it. And
right.
it's part of who we are, that pain and suffering. And dealing with that at a really deep level is what's going to help everybody eventually.
Right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a great interview.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always wonderful to talk about this stuff.
Well, we've been interviewing Dr. David Lowe, Universal Spiritual Philosophy and Practice. It's a very good overall textbook for introduction, as well as it's not just introductory, but a comprehensive look at everything in, as he said, 200 pages, which is great. And if you will take a look at his website, there's a lot of other things that he offers there. So this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we will be interviewing Dr. Garth Nicholson on fibromyalgia and other fatiguing illnesses. Thank you for joining us.